past and emerging, and recognizes their continuing connections to the land, waterways, and community. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land. Hi all, I'm Dee and you are listening to Teaching Journey Podcast, Connecting with Early Education, episode 23. In this episode, I sat down with Rachel Smith, who is a family daycare educator based in a small town of 25 houses in Coonagong, New South Wales. She has been awarded Educator of the Year in 2020 and 2023 by Family Daycare Australia, and have recently been nominated for Women Changing the World Award. She's a perfect example of rising from adversity. Being through with personal and professional challenges, she has an inspiring ability to self-reflect and motivate herself and others. She shared her recent blog post by bearing it all with the challenges she faced, and that the posts have reached, inspired, and connected educators nationwide who are in similar positions. When listening to Rachel sharing about the complexities of not only being in a rural and regional service, I can't help to think about how similar it is for us who work in an inner city in an early childhood service with a large group of educators. It may mean that we have opportunities to collaborate and work with others. And the funny thing is that even though we are surrounded with people, when we are faced with a challenge, it can sometimes feel isolating. There is a professional standards that we need to meet, and like Rachel was talking about, not wanting to be difficult, we tend to keep to ourselves, and hence feeling isolated. But Rachel's stories of sharing on her blog post highlighted that when we share our vulnerabilities, we become relational to others, and can often more than not boost our confidence, power, and motivate ourselves. Cognitively, it all makes sense, doesn't it? But the first step of sharing can be a challenge, and if you have been listening to a few of our episodes now, you will see a common theme of find your tribe. But the catch-22 for most of us, who sits in a space of isolation and uncertainties, it is a challenge on its own to first find your own identity of being and belonging before knowing what your tribe would look like. So I ask you to reflect with me on these questions. Who are you as a teacher or educator or a leader? What are your values and where does it sit in your practice? What are your passion and interests, or what gets you very excited? And Rachel gave a perfect example of paddock to play, where it might not be a common topic or interest in early child sector, but she is so passionate about it that she learns and finds ways to integrate it into her teaching practices. And then find those who have similar values or interests or the excitement levels that you do. The people in our tribe is not who share the space of disagreement or negative energy about a particular person or service. And often this can be appealing because it feels great to have someone who shares your frustration. But I know for myself that being in a cycle of negativity will impact my mental health, professionalism, and my relationship with the people who I care. But the ones who would guide you through self-reflection, who would challenge you to come out of that negative space, and who would guide you to resurface by finding your inner self-motivation are a keeper. So here it is, episode 23 with Rachel Smith. Enjoy. Rachel to the Teaching Journey Podcast. It's so great to have you here. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me on, Dee. I'm really excited to be here and to get to share my story and my journey of where I've come from over the last few years.
Yeah, and we've actually never had anyone from family daycare background, so this is really exciting. So you're the first. So
wow.
So let's kick off. Yes, you like to be first. Yes. So let's kick off with, you know, starting yourself with introducing who you are to our listeners and sharing where you are currently now and just a brief insight to your experience in the early child sector.
As Dee mentioned, I'm Rachel. I am a mum of a 3.5 little girl who started school yesterday. She is the reason that I guess keep doing what I do now. I've been doing daycare or family daycare in particular for 5 years, but I've been in the early childhood sector for 18 years, I think. a very long time, straight out of school, jumped straight into being a nanny. Most of my experience is home-based care, so family daycare, nannying, in-home care along that area of our sector. So my focus, I suppose, is a little bit different to being in a centre. I've got my small group of children and that doesn't tend to change. In the last, we moved 2.5 years ago from New South Wales, from regional town Wagga Wagga in the Riverina, to a tiny, tiny little town about 20 k's out of Mount Gambier in South Australia. We've got 25 houses maybe in our town, and we have a school and a football club, and that's about it. completely surrounded by dairy farms. My family daycare is very much based around sustainability and teaching children about where our food, produce, our meat, everything comes from. So the children last year got an amazing experience to, we got donated some lambs and they got to raise them. So the lambs we got were less than 24 hours old and we raised them. They are currently fattening themselves up in somebody else's paddock that we borrow, because community is such a big part of where we are. So that's amazing that we've got that access to people like that to, oh yeah, we're not going to build on our block anytime soon. So yeah, throw your sheep in there, it means we don't have to mow it and you don't have to worry about feeding your sheep.
Yeah, yeah. And that's so nice, because when we talk about, you know, getting donations from family, it will be like, you know, we got papers and cardboard boxes and, you know, but you're talking about a donation of like a lamb. It's just amazing. Yeah. Yeah. And do you feel like it's really close-knit, like everyone knows everyone, I'm sure? And
everybody knows everybody's business. Don't really know everybody.
Yeah.
So it's funny, well, because we've been here two and a bit years now, and everybody said, yeah, wait till your daughter starts school. You'll fall into the community really, really quickly. You'll feel welcomed. And yeah. We love going to community dinners. So one of the big things that our community does is a Friday or a Saturday night dinner, and there everybody goes up to the football club and you meet the entire community there because everybody goes.
Yeah.
It's not the sort of thing that you get in the city. Mm. So I guess my experience in that is also, I'm really lucky that we have what we have. But I also know that there are other people in communities like this that don't have that. And I think it comes down to your personality. You have to be willing to put the work in and be part of your community if you want the community part of you and your service.
Yeah.
So last year we had a working bee. I wanted to transform our backyard. We got donations from, we had to go and pick a lot of it up, but we collected rocks and plants and trees, and all of my family's past and present came to help us build new fences and build new gardens. And it was the most amazing experience. And then we had a local butcher who donated all the sausages to us so we could have a sausage sizzle. It's like, I'm one person. I don't have the backup of a huge service behind me with lots of other educators where you can bring all your families in together. I rely on the families that I have in my service and the families in my community to be where we are.
Yeah. And I think one of the challenges, as a lot of the educators mentioned, working in the sector, for me personally, I used to work and live in the same community. And so, you know, when I go to the bath, I would see parents there, you know, while I'm changing my clothes. I kid you not, while I'm changing my clothes, I'm like half naked, and a mom will walk in and go, oh, hi Dean. I'm like, oh, great, thank you. You know, so, you know, one of the challenges is that, you know, you're so close that sometimes it can be really, really hard to detach. Is that what you're finding, or you just love that close-knit communities?
Well, I suppose it helps because my kids don't, or the children that are in my care or in my service don't all come from our local community.
Yeah, okay, yep.
So they come from Mount Gambier or they come from Carpenter's Rocks, and that's not part of our 25 houses.
Yeah, yeah.
That extending beyond the immediate vicinity.
Is it because there's none around their area, or are they choosing to come get the hurt about your service?
Combination of both. Because so where we are, Mount Gambier, I think there's 3 family daycare services. That's it. And they're all chockers. They're all chock-a-block full. And then there's another one over in Allendale. She's also chock-a-block full. And then there's me. And Allendale is a similar little location to where I am. It's tiny. Oh, actually, it's about 10 times the size of where I am, but it's still a tiny little community. It's what's classified as a sleeper community. So people come home to sleep and then they go back into town. The biggest issue, I think, and it's all across the community, all across the childcare sector, is that we have no educators. There is wait lists in every single centre that you talk to. And particularly out here, we find that centres are maybe 60 to 70% capacity because they don't have staff. Yep. So parents are choosing to drive their children out to me because it's not that I have spots, but because I'm new in the area, I am not full all the time. The downside of being where I am, though, is that when they get offered a spot in town, they take it.
And so you did mention that you're new in town. And so how do you establish that new relationship and building that trust with families as well and getting the name out?
It only takes one. Once one person is really happy with you, they tend to spread the word. They say it takes 10 people, 10 happy customers to build up a reputation and one to destroy it. And to a point, yes, I agree, but I also think, like, I'm out there. We started, so when we first moved down here, my daughter and I, we went to all the play groups. We went to the shops. We get out there. We see people. We talk to people. If there's an event on, we go to it. It does help that when I first moved down here, I was also a thermomix consultant. So I was going to people's houses and introducing myself to people all the time, meeting new people. So I already had that established positive reputation, I suppose. So when I started family daycare in April last year, back up down here, I should say, it was like people already knew who I was. So that was really good for trying to get established. I did have the benefit that I'd been babysitting for a lot of families. So most of the families that I started with, that the day I opened, I was full.
Yeah. And so when you started 18 years ago, did you immediately start into a family daycare, kind of establish your own service, or were you working alongside someone else or another community?
When I started 18 years ago, I was a full-time live-in nanny in Europe.
Yeah.
That was my first job. And I came back from that going, I hate kids. I never want to work with kids ever again. Hated everything about it. It was the worst experience of my life.
Right.
And why? I don't know.
No, I seen, like, so what shifted then? Like, you know, to you now working around
children. I got a job in a town called Moree, northern New South Wales, and I was a full-time live-in nanny there with the most amazing family, and their youngest 2 children just graduated year 12 last year. And their daughter was also my flower girl when we got married.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
So to have a negative experience doesn't necessarily have to rule what happens next because that positive experience changed my life.
Yeah.
And they are the most amazing family. They actually rang me over the weekend to ask if I knew of any rental locations where their daughter's about to go to uni because it's where we used to live. And I was like, oh, I'm so disappointed we're not there anymore.
Yeah.
But that's the relationship that I have with most of the families that I have looked after over the last 18 years.
And so, you know, what was the transition like for you getting into the earlier sector then?
There wasn't one. I really wasn't given an option.
Okay.
And that sounds really terrible. So when I was at school, I wanted to be an agricultural research scientist. When I left school, I kind of bombed out in year 12. So that was never going to happen. And I needed to come up with something else. I had been teaching swimming, knew that I liked working with kids. So went and did my Cert 3 in Children's Services as a accelerated course. And that took 6 months. And the day that I finished that course was the day I went to Europe. Yeah, it was no second guessing. It was, yep, you're done, go, leave. Yep. So I did that and then came back and just sort of bounced around place to place. So I worked in Coogee as a live-in nanny for a long time. In the Hills District of Sydney, I was there for so long. And then about 10 years ago, I moved from Sydney to Wagga, and that's where I met my husband. And I was a full-time live-in nanny out there as well. Well, actually, most of those jobs are actually in-home care. So I'm required to do the same things as what's required with family daycare. Okay. Parents get CCS or CCB, CCR back then, and fill in your timesheets, you get paid, parents pay the gap, et cetera, et cetera. Still required to do your planning, your programming, your reflections, doing all those things for one family. And it messes with your head to do it with one family because there's so much work that you have to do. Family doesn't read it. You talk to them. You live with them. You talk to them every day. They don't care about any of that. And then when I moved from Sydney to Lockhart, I was with a family out there, and I was with a service, and they wanted me to be better, I suppose. And that's just, I guess, when my mindset started to change, was that there is better options than being treated poorly in somebody else's house because everybody's stepping on everybody else's toes. And that's the first time that family daycare came into my scope of possibilities, I guess.
Yeah. And what was that like for you to start a family daycare then?
It was exciting. It was a challenge that I didn't expect, but I sort of fell into it and loved it from the day dot. The families I had in Wagga were absolutely beautiful. I was very lucky to have the option to have a relief educator while I was in Wagga as well, because I ended up being pregnant and having a baby and having all sorts of issues with that. She was supposed to start on doing one day a week and build that relationship up with the families and the children while I was still working. And she did her first day. I went to the doctors and got put on bed rest straight away. So she started full time from day dot, and it was great. But when I brought my little girl home from the hospital, the kids were so confused because all of a sudden they weren't my main focus. And it was this balancing act then of how do I incorporate my own child into my service? Versa. So I appreciated the 3 months that I had there, but with the service that I was with, it was, yeah, this is what you have to do. Don't care what you do as long as you're doing these things. And then I moved from that service to another service with a very big Indigenous focus, and I started with the initial service that I was with, it was like doing the wombat wobble. Do you know the wombat wobble?
Yep.
Love that song. That was enough. That was enough to incorporate Indigenous perspective into your service if you were doing that every day. And so I did that every day with the kids because that's what I was told to do. It was doing the absolute bare minimum just to get past. And then I moved to a new service where their focus was more on how to implement Indigenous activities or Indigenous perspectives into your service. And I went, oh, wow, hang on, there's more to this than what I was doing. What? I don't understand. Why was I doing so little when there's so much more out there? And I got challenged again to be better, to step up. Actually, it was the same service. So the same service that I was with when I was doing in-home care, who challenged me the first time, they challenged me a second time when I came back to be with them for family daycare. And then we moved.
Let's talk about I guess, what it's like to be challenged. You know, we've had a couple of conversations before the recording. And the examples that you've just given is a perfect example, because you've, you know, gone to a service, kind of say, all right, this is exactly how we should do it, and I want you to do it this way. There's no other ways, and, you know, let's do the wombat wobble, and it needs to be done every day. Do not question. And then going to another place and kind of go, actually, why? Why, you know, is there other ways? Have you considered other ways? Have you, you know, researched and look at other things? And how does that make, you know, that connection with you? What's the processes like that, that, you know, you went through in that sense?
So with those ones, it's a matter of understanding what you're required to do, I guess. And having a service backing you who understands what you are required to do as well. You have to look at everything that's put in front of you and go, okay, can I take what they're saying as, I guess, gospel and just do exactly what they say? Or am I going to make myself better and research it and work out if that's actually right? And 10 years ago, yeah, I took what they said and ran with it. Whereas once I started to be challenged to be better and to actually reflect on what I was doing, not reflect. So I guess back then my reflection would have been, yep, this went really well. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Move on.
Correct.
My reflections now are a good page, if not longer. And it breaks down everything. It breaks down how I can do better, why it didn't work, what I'm going to do to make it better in general, and all the things that they're supposed to include. But back then I didn't do it like that.
Mm.
And I didn't do it like that because nobody had questioned what I was doing. I guess in family daycare we have to look at how we are managing our service ourselves.
Mm.
And if nobody looks at what you're doing and nobody questions it, how do you know any better?
Yeah, there's no accountability because you think that, all right, yeah, everything's all perfect, I'll just keep going until someone actually stop and say, hey, what's going on there?
Does that kind of answer your challenge question? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. But I guess it's just more of, you know, when you talk about reflection and I get what you mean by back in the day, you know, because reflection now, it's so important. It's part of the critical, you know, when we talk about the framework, the new version, it talks a lot about reflection and how important it is to have that those critical reflection. It's not only about the practices, it's also about yourself. But to be able to be comfortable with reflecting on your own practices and really consider, all right, what's not working? Is it, you know, about my own personal philosophy? Is it my own practice? And how can I shift rather than, all right, let's just figure something out and let's just make it work? But looking within in can be quite a challenge. Was that something that you struggle with at the beginning, kind of questioning yourself and kind of go, oh, okay, this is not working. I need to work on these areas. And how am I going to reach out, or what resources do I need to reach out to improve myself in this area?
So when I first started looking at the idea of doing a reflection, I was really challenged by it because nobody wants to look at themselves as being not good enough. And that's really hard. My personality makes that really hard. But I found out that you don't have to give your reflection to somebody else, that made it a lot easier.
Okay.
Yes, there are some reflections that you're going to need to share, and that's fine. But if you were reflecting on yourself, you don't need to share that with anybody else.
Mm.
This is for you. And you, as a person, as an educator, as everything, the only way that you're going to get better is to reflect on what you've done. And once I wrapped my head around that, this was for my benefit. And that was then in turn going to make me better for my job, my families, my parenting, my relationship with my husband. Everything that we do, if we can reflect on everything that we do, we can learn and establish new ways of doing things to make them better. And it doesn't just have to be in early childhood.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
So there's a lot of information out there. And if you, it's the same, I guess, and wrapping the two things together is professional development. Professional development doesn't have to be based on the early childhood sector. If you want to know how to implement paddock to plate in your childcare service, guess what? You have to go and learn about paddock to plate in a paddock to plate environment. It's not going to be early childhood focused, but you can take that information and manipulate it to suit an early childhood setting.
Mm.
So I guess taking that reflection and going, okay, so what do I want to teach? What do I want to, how do I want to teach it? And how am I going to do this in a way which is going to keep me engaged as well as the children engaged? That changed my perspective on how to do my reflections as well as how to do everything else within my service.
Yeah. And you're right. You're highlighting a really obvious, distinct gap, I guess, within the early years sector in a way that, you know, when you're out there in a regional community, there's not a lot of information out there. You're pretty much isolated on your own, you know, in a deep mud, I should say. And so for you, it's about researching, all right, what does that look like? How can I translate those information and make it relational to me and to my community? And that is reflected into the EYLF and the NQS. And, you know, that I am also keeping an environment that is safe, it allows you to take risks and so on. So you're basically modifying and implementing it in a way that makes sense for you. And that can be challenging because what you're doing is you're redefining your own practices because there's none out there like, you know, there's no step one, step two, step three, because you have to come up with your own solution and you have to modify it constantly. But isn't that, not only isn't that exciting, but isn't that, you're creating a reform of, yeah, groundbreaking. And so it's a reform of, you know, shifting that change that you're making in early years. So
it's a matter of having the confidence and arming yourself with the knowledge to do what you need to do.
Yeah.
So, for example, recently I went through a bit of a challenge because I started to understand the regulations a little bit too much. I started to push back and have a greater understanding of what I'm required to do when it comes to meeting those regs and questioning, can you explain to me why we're doing this way? I'm not going to go into that too much, but it changed the way that I look at the world, I guess.
It's interesting, sorry to stop,
but
it's interesting that you said that's a challenge. It's a challenge that I know the regs too much. It's a challenge now. It becomes an inconvenient almost. Like
It seemed to do that, exactly. Okay. But we need, as educators, we need to know what they are, especially in family daycare. And this is something that I'm noticing more and more across the board is educators don't know the regs. Some of them will know maybe where to find things, but if you don't know the regulations, how do you know you're doing the right thing? How do you know that you're not the one liable for the $25,000 fine that comes with not doing something properly? Yep. As an educator, as a family daycare educator, we're registered through a service, but we're registered ourselves. And we are responsible for meeting those regulations and we will cop that fine. And some services will pass their fine on to you as well. Mm. Now, if you don't know the regulations, how do you know that you're not the one? How do you know that you're not doing the right thing? And questioning that, I've never been encouraged to read the regulations as an educator.
Yeah.
And I don't know how it works in a service setting or in-service setting instead of an in-home setting, but I didn't believe that I had the time or I was required to know the regs inside out, upside down and back to front. Don't get me wrong, I don't know them now inside out, upside down or back to front either, but I know where to find the information. And knowing that, I can go, hang on, I want to read the regulations before you tell me that I have to do something that way. For example, planning and programming. The regulations do not say how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
They tell you what you need to use to do it, but they don't tell you how, which means that in family daycare and any service that you have the opportunity to create something that works for you. And that is an exciting thing because we are all different. same as all the children that we look after are all different. So working with something that works for us and that we've created means that we can make it work, and we can explain that when an authorizing officer comes in to talk to us.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. And so what was the process like when you were challenging that?
There wasn't really a process. I just got shut down.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And let's talk about that, you know, getting shut down and, you know, what does that do to your confidence and to your mental health and, you know?
That's such a big thing. being shut down was, it's a scary thing because, one, you don't really expect it. It makes it very difficult to go, okay, so what am I going to do now? Family daycare is my life. I'm not moving. I'm registering with a new service and I have no issue with that. The service I'm registering with has no issue with anything that apparently I got my contract was terminated for. So, yeah, if I'd been terminated for something that was breaking the law or against the regulation, yeah, fine, but I wasn't. So that's all well and good. But confidence-wise, oh my goodness, it's a real kick in the guts. What year were we last year? 2023. I was Mount Gambier and the Limestone Coast Family Daycare Educator of the Year.
Yeah.
I know I'm good at what I do. I know I'm appreciated for what I do. And that service had to give me a recommendation to win that award. So how can you flip like that? That was, I suppose, the big thing that was going through my head. How can you all of a sudden go from singing my praises to shutting me down? So that was really hard, I guess, in that sense. But then you have a decision to make, and you do every day. Every time something bad happens, every time something good happens, you have a decision to make. You can either let it destroy you and you curl up in a ball and go, okay, I'm not good enough. This isn't me. This isn't for me. Okay, what am I going to do next? You can go through all of that self-doubt and self-pity. And don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong at all. I did that. I did that for 24 hours.
24 hours. That's really short in my time, but yeah, good. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. I have a 3.5-year-old.
Yeah.
It's 24 hours is like a week in her life. So things need to move a little bit quicker. And to really establish why I did this, I'll just tell you a little bit background first. So when we moved down here, we were in this house that we were in for 6 months, and our house was broken into, completely vandalized from top to bottom, everything that you can possibly imagine broken. It was the most horrific scene to walk into. The police turned up and they came in and went, okay, well, cool, whatever. They looked at it briefly, questioned us very briefly, and then decided to tell our insurance company that they didn't think it looked right. So then we were investigated for insurance fraud for 8 months, living in a house that was barely livable. I went down that rabbit hole. I've been down that rabbit hole before. I didn't know how to wake up in the morning. I couldn't do family daycare because my house was barely livable. Our kitchen was so destroyed that we had no cupboards on our kitchen doors. It was horrific. I went through a whole lot of counseling. I had a mentor who helped me to come through all of that. Obviously, we didn't do it. We got cleared for it. We got our insurance payout. We've pretty much renovated almost our whole house. We have all the things that needed to be replaced were replaced. But I've been down that rabbit hole. And when all this happened in November last year, I had a choice. I could either go down that rabbit hole again, or I could go, oh my goodness, this is a joke. I am better than this. How am I going to make something of it? In response to my termination letter, I decided to write a blog post. My blog post was called Embracing the Challenges. We've talked a lot about challenges today. Embracing the challenges. My word for 2024 is actually embrace or embracing and anything that comes from that. Writing that blog post was one cathartic. It was a great experience to get to write all that down. And then what came from that was even more incredible. Because I put this out there in the universe and I put it out there in the family daycare community to read, I had people message me and tell me this has happened to me too. I am experiencing the same, I suppose, bullying, there's no other word to put on it, or manipulation, or I don't even know what other words to throw in there for that at the moment. But there's so many, they were putting it, they read my post and they were touched enough by it. Now, my post hasn't been read by a great deal of people. It's been read maybe 120 times. And I had more than 30 messages telling me that this was happening across Australia, not just where I am. That was really sad. So I wrote a second blog post called Embracing the Challenges, Calling Out Educators and Services to Be Better. And that is when everything sort of exploded. I decided that I wanted to make something of this absolute rubbish that I was going through, and I wanted to support other people to do the same, to be okay with the challenges that they were facing, to be that person that can help somebody else through it, because I've already been through it. So yeah,
that's inspiring, because you know, you have to be really resilient, and it's you know, it's one thing to just kind of like, all right, let's just move on and you know, let's jump into the next thing. But what you've done is that you found that as a fire to continue fueling your energy, and the work that you've been doing a lot more into your blog posts and inspiring other people and the conversations. And now you're building a community as well. Is that right? Out from your blog posts as well. So that's wonderful. You're not only helping yourself within a small little pocket of, you know, community, but it's pretty much nationwide, which is great. Yeah. And how do keep going.
No, it's exciting. That's all.
Yeah. But how do you keep yourself motivated? Because you have to continue with that energy. How do you keep yourself going then?
Today is going to be really hard because my little girl's at school. So this is the first day I've got absolutely nobody in my house. but normally, look, I am very passionate, as I said, about sustainability and paddock to plate and animals and engaging all those things in our service. And I think there's a lot of educators out there who go, okay, I don't know how to do that. I have an amazing wealth of knowledge in that area because this is what I do every day. So knowing that I can help somebody else and I can be a sounding board for somebody else, hey, Rachel, do you think this would work? Or, hey, Rachel, I want to do this, but I don't know how to approach my service for it. That gives me motivation and drive to keep moving forward. I have somewhat stopped putting, actually, I read something amazing yesterday. Somebody put on, I'm currently doing a coaching course and it's fantastic. And one of the other people put on it, your windscreen is always bigger than your rearview mirror.
Yes. Yes.
And all I could think of was, wow, I needed to read that, because there is no point looking back, constantly looking back. Yeah, okay, the bad stuff happens, and I want to say something else, but I'm not going to. The bad stuff happens. But are you going to let that make you, or are you going to let that break you? And you have that option. And I'm not perfect by any means. And I have my days where I am more than happy to curl up on the lounge and feel sorry for myself, or have those moments where I just want to burst into tears. But at the end of the day, I have to be able to stand up and be a mum and be a wife and go, okay, there's somebody out there who is worse than I am. And that is what keeps me going. No, what's the point of looking back all the time?
And so looking back, pun intended, what have you learned about yourself?
That I am pretty freaking amazing, and I am so much stronger than I ever thought I could possibly be.
Yeah.
I got nominated for an award last week. It's a pretty cool award. I didn't even know it exists, but it's called Women Who Are Changing the World.
Wow.
And it's hosted by Sarah York from the Royal Family.
What?
And it's hosted by Barack Obama's wife, Michelle Obama, which is so cool. I'm not progressing through it. It's not something that I don't see myself at that point. I'm changing the face of, maybe trying to change the face of family daycare in Australia, but I'm not going to try and change the world. But the fact that somebody else has seen what I'm doing as being something incredible enough to nominate me for something like that, wow, that gobsmacked me. That blew my mind.
Yeah, yeah. And do you think that keeps you motivated within yourself as well, that you're on the right path? Because yes, often, absolutely. You know, like you said, you know, oh, you know, I feel that, you know, it was a challenge for me to know the rags. It was a challenge. I was inconvenient. But now you kind of go, was that inconvenient, or am I on the right path? You know, you're questioning yourself constantly, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. And I always will, because what I'm doing at the moment doesn't make me a great deal of money.
Yeah.
I need to get back to doing family daycare. And currently we're waiting for CCS approval for the service that I'm moving to. And that's exciting because I love what I do. The sad part of not working currently or not having family daycare CCS approval is that the children who do come to my care are being looked after for free.
Yeah.
Because it is illegal to charge. But I am able to put my energy and keep my brain focused on doing something else other than feeling sorry for myself. I can look at the fact that I'm helping these families out, even though it's not making anything. I'm helping somebody. And I suppose that is, a love language.
Mm.
I like to give. And being able to give back helps me to keep going.
Yeah. And I think that's what the wonderful thing about that community that you have, isn't it? And I think that's why you enjoy being out in the regional, you know, community and being out there with knowing everyone, sharing and helping. It's something else more than, all right, you know, this is where I live and I will have to suck it up and deal with it and make the most of it. But what you've done is like, what does this community need? How can I contribute? And, you know, how can I leave a legacy and also be able to show my children this is, you know, the life that we choose. It's your choice. Yep. Every day to be kind to people and to share. So that's amazing. Yeah. What's your advice for someone who, you know, out in a rural community just like you and who's having a really, really hard time at the moment, trying to find their identity, trying to find their voice within a lot of challenges that you face in a family daycare? What sort of advice can you give to them?
Find your person.
Mm.
I found my people, and I think that is why I love where I am, love what I'm doing. That person or those people, they are the people that are going to keep you going. And if you can find that one person that you can go and cry to or laugh with or metaphorically punch in the face, don't actually punch anybody, then that makes a world of difference. And I think something that family daycare or across the board the education or early childhood sector needs is a mentor program. A program where I can call somebody who's been doing this a lot longer than I have, but that person also needs to be better than what I am doing. Now, that sounds really silly, but there are people who've been doing in the education sector for 25, 30, 40 years who have lost that passion and drive but are still doing it because, well, they can't do anything else as such. But finding those mentors who want to see people thriving and embracing and growing in the early childhood sector, they're the ones that we want to see being in that position of a mentorship.
Yeah.
Having that, because I have those people. I am really lucky. I have met some incredible educators through my journey. And even over the last, 4 months, 3 months that it's been, the people that have come out of the woodwork and the people that have started to support and guide and be there have just been amazing. And I never would have connected with people in other states if it hadn't been for all of this rubbish. So having that mentor, having those people around you, half the people I've never even met in real life, in face-to-face. It's all phone, it's all Zoom, it's all on Facebook. But those connections are what's going to keep you going.
Yeah, yeah. And especially more so when you're out in isolated community as well. It's about actively seeking out for those connections. And, you know, it is challenging. You'd be surprised that a lot of city folks, I should say educated city folks, find that a challenge to find a community. And we're so close in proximity and you guys are so far away. So, you know, it's about, really coming together. And I think that's, you know, which is why I created a podcast as well, so that we're all together. We're all the same. We all go through the challenges. You're not the only one that's having a hard time, because someone out there would have had that experience before or is going through that experience. It's about coming together, essentially. What's your vision for early childhood sector? And I often throw it out in a way that's the, you know, the most, well, it's ridiculous, but you never know. You could be a prime minister one day. What would you do as a prime minister for early childhood?
Okay, so I believe that family daycare has a huge role to play in the early childhood sector, and I think it's massive, and I think people underestimate it. There's a huge amount of early childhood educators who are leaving our sector every year because of burnout, because of bullying, exhaustion, everything else, all those things. What if those educators knew that they actually had an option? Family daycare is a great option for educators. However, the isolation is what I think kills people more than anything else, that kills that passion. But if we look at family daycare as being a huge part to play instead of this minority group of educators, because, there's not a lot of us compared to educators in a centre. We are all aware of that. But imagine if we could have, and it wouldn't work for everybody and it has to be done really, really well. Imagine if we could have two educators running their own services out of one home. Yeah, they'd have to have the two bathrooms, the two toilet, the two play areas, the two kitchens and all the other things. I'm aware of all of that. But to come together to decrease that isolation factor, and to have that person to bounce off while still having your own business and minimizing that burnout because you're working your own hours, you're following all the rules in a smaller scale. Imagine having that in our sector. Yeah. And I can't talk about centers because I don't have the experience there, but family daycare is massive. It has massive potential.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's finish off with this question. One advice that you would tell your beginning teacher self back in the day, in, let's not go back to your nanny days, but, you know, your first few years of your family daycare experiences, what would you tell yourself? What would that be?
Find your passion. Find your groove before finding the groove of the kids in your care.
Finding yourself, essentially. Your authentic self. Yeah, definitely. Well, you're an inspiration. It's just amazing how resilient you are. And I do believe that you're one of the women who would change the world. And so I'm really excited to see that award, you know, that you'll be nominated in that award. I'm going to find out a little bit more about it. But, yeah, thank you so much. And I'll also share the blog page that you have. And I think it's fantastic what you're building towards a community of family daycare, and the resources that you have up on your website is fantastic. And you're such an inspiration. It's such a privilege to have you on the podcast, Rachel. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Teaching Journey Podcast, Connecting Through Early Education. If you enjoyed this episode, we would love to hear your feedback or even reach out to us if you would like to share your teaching journey with us. Connect with us on Instagram by searching for Teaching Journey Podcast. For links of your guest speakers, resources and reflections mentioned in this episode, check out our show notes. We hope to have inspired you today to continue your journey of self-reflection and authenticity, contributing to the ripple effect of reform of early education. See you in the next episode!